from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Whoa, is this for real? Good morning. It's been a while.
Hey, welcome back.
I've got to say thank you. I was thrilled that my key card still worked this morning after being gone for so long.
Stop.
I was like, I wasn't sure about that. Hey, Jack Stein from Cairo Knights. Good morning.
Good morning, Ursula. How are you feeling after your what do we want to call it? So my understanding is that you were saving a bus full of orphans from going over a cliff.
Well, that would be much more interesting. I got to tell you, it was the weirdest time off. So I am always into sharing way too much of my life. So I was intending to be on medical leave for a surgery. It was an elective surgery, but it was going to happen. And then my heart decided not to cooperate. I got too dehydrated. I was
working. Your heart was not into this procedure, Ursula.
Yeah, it wasn't
was
a gut feeling. It was a heart feeling.
Yes.
And so apparently when you have low potassium and you don't get enough water in, your heart can kind of do some weird heartbeats.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was told that we should just hold off on the surgery. So I just chilled for 2 weeks. I have not been off that long since maternity leave.
Wow.
That's how weird that was.
But you look so nice and refreshed and
she
looks fluffy, Jack. She's just fluffy.
It was a good amount of time off, but I'm ready to come back. Jack Stein, again, from Cairo Knights, co-piloting with me today. Just want to say thank you to everybody who has filled in. I heard fabulous feedback. So I know it was a great couple of weeks while we were gone. G is getting married today, Jack.
Wow.
Yeah, today. Well,
I thought he was getting married for whatever reason. Chef was talking about this earlier. I thought he got married last week.
No. So he took a couple of days off leading to it. It's a destination wedding. And we're actually going to hear from him coming up at 10:45. So we will get an update because apparently he says there's something that we should have told him that he didn't know when it comes to weddings. So I look forward to that. But I think we got to get right to it. Our top stories of the day. Brought to you by Economy Fence. And you heard the newscast from Heather. The Supreme Court has sided with that former Bremerton High School football coach who was suspended for praying with his players on the field. In today's 6-3 decision, the High Court ruled along ideological lines in favor of Coach Joseph Kennedy. CBS legal analyst Jan Crawford.
To put this in perspective, this is a Supreme Court that really believes the pendulum has swung too far against religion. And so there are arguments in this case that if the football coach lost, that would prohibit people from saying a private prayer in the school lunchroom.
In writing for the conservative majority, Justice Neil Gorsuch said the Bremerton School District misconstrued the First Amendment and suppressed Coach Kennedy's right to pray on the field out of concern that he would coerce students to follow his lead. Gorsuch's opinion calls that discrimination, saying that Coach Kennedy's postgame prayer was private speech, not government speech. But the court's three liberals dissented, saying that the ruling now calls into question decades of past decisions on the separation between church and state. And in an earlier interview on Cairo, Coach Kennedy explained why it's so important for him to pray after games.
This is a covenant that I made with God that after every game, this is before I even started coaching, that if I became a coach, this is what I do. I give you the glory on the 50 after every single game.
So, Jack, I ask you and all of our listeners, did the Supreme Court get it right?
I'm of two minds about this. Okay, so, and my mind is basically, because I want Coach Kennedy to be able to pray at the 50-yard line if that's what he wants to do. But I also hear tell that some of the students felt pressured, they felt coerced, is that right? In order to, or they felt as if they didn't pray to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they wouldn't get to play?
Some parents had complained that even though he said it was voluntary, that they felt like it could potentially make their players feel like they had to, or else maybe they wouldn't get enough playing time, or they wouldn't be seen with favor by this coach because the coach is very influential.
Okay, so I wonder, and this is a question that I ask myself. I wonder if it was a, like, let's just say that there was a Muslim woman and she is wearing a hijab, right? And she just so happens to be a football coach. I'm just saying, that this world
sure,
exists.
Why not?
And some of the parents say, why do you have to have that level of religious expression around these kids? You know what I mean? It might be uncomfortable for the kids. I mean, would anybody want to broach that subject knowing that it would blow up in their face? Or is it easier to go after, and I'm just going to throw this out there, to go after the white guy who's going to the 50-yard line after the game and praying? Is it easier to do that than it is to go after, let us just say, I don't know, Chef, you actually said something that was really funny. You said, well, what if he was like burning pentagrams in the 50-yard line, right? Like,
or what if he was Wiccan and decided to,
Wiccan, blowing a horn, right? Is it, at what point do people get irritated with it enough to actually say something? And that's the question that I ask people. Is it really that irritating to people?
Well, for me, the issue is the separation of church and state, and this does weaken that barrier. And there's been a lot of talk about the attack on Christianity, but again, like you just mentioned, let's say this was a different religion. If the coach wanted to pull out a Quran after the games, would you feel differently? So that's a question that you've got to ask yourself if you say, hey, they got it right. Well, is it because they got it right because you believe in this particular religion? Are you going to have a different opinion if it's a different religion? And I mean, for years and years, for decades, the Supreme Court has ruled on keeping government and church separate. The school had offered Coach Kennedy the option of praying elsewhere, but he said, no, that's going to be too far from my players. So, in fact, he does want to have influence on his players.
That changes my opinion 100%. So they were going to accommodate him and allow him to celebrate our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and then he turned into a petulant child and said, no, I will do it here or I will sue you? Is that the general?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it turned into a petulant child, but I think his attorney sniffed exactly what happened, an ability to go to the Supreme Court and end up getting this decision. And we've got a makeup of the Supreme Court right now that I'm not surprised that they ruled in it went exactly on ideological lines.
Right.
So
now I find that to be like deeply irritating, because if they were going to say, okay, well, you can do it here and you can, you know, we're totally fine with it, and then he says no, that to me is that then that is an imposition, right? Because now you are literally slapping away the hand that is saying, we want to help you and facilitate your faith. And he's saying, no, I'm going to do it my way, or I'm not going to do it at all. That's pretty absurd, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, you can pray whenever and wherever you want. There is no one on the face of the earth that can stop you from praying, right? Because you can pray silently in your head. You can send up a prayer at any time, anywhere. Mm. Now, taken in context, just last week, the Supreme Court also ruled that if a state provides money to a private school, then they also have to provide public money to a private Christian or religious school. And again, I ask the context, are people really comfortable with public tax dollars going to, let's say, a private Islamic academy, right? Because those have been painted by the right as breeding grounds for terrorism and extremism. And under that context, and even under, I think, what is commonly understood constitutional context, there is a separation of church and state. And we are seeing that being eroded before our eyes.
Exactly right. And again, this idea that this coach was not pressuring anyone. Of course, you're going to do everything that you want to try to please your coach. So and you know that in many cases, these coaches do have an outsized influence on their players. So, again, I would love to hear from all of you listening right now. 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. What do you think? Did they get it right, or is this a violation of church and state? Over the weekend, people carrying signs that said abortion is health care rallied in Olympia to protest the Supreme Court decision on Friday overturning Roe v. Wade.
You guys ready to cheer? What do we want?
Choice!
When do we want it?
Always!
Governor Inslee was there. He called the decision un-American. He promised to fight for a state constitutional amendment protecting the right to an abortion. He's also ordering the state patrol to not cooperate with law enforcement from other states who may want to prosecute women who travel here to Washington to get an abortion.
And we're going to expand access to abortion services for the people in need.
And he says he wants to make our state a sanctuary state for the right of choice. Your thoughts?
Can I encapsulate it in a fun anecdote?
Yes.
So I do the show with Travis on Friday, and it's right when the news breaks. And then, you know, my stance is that I think and I maintain that, you know, that there are circumstances where a woman may not want to get an abortion, but she medically needs to have an abortion. There are literally hundreds of them. You can go and you can look them up right now. And this is a violation of what I would refer to as someone's medical freedom, right? That there are so many complications that can arise in a pregnancy, and an abortion happens to fix those issues. I got a text message from somebody after the show, just a series of text messages, just lambasting me, excoriating me. Jack Stein, how could you be so ignorant? How could you sound like such a liberal? They were unbelievably nasty to me about this particular issue. And I realized something, that for so many people, this has nothing to do with like medical science as much as it has to do with their ideological preferences. And that's what I find unbelievably irritating. Just as an example, there is a physician in one of the states, he's an OBGYN, and he's been practicing for like 30 years. So he had a patient on Friday. He tweeted this out. He had a patient on Friday who had a partial miscarriage. And so he prescribed her a medication to help her complete the miscarriage, a very tragic incident in this young woman's life. So she goes to the pharmacy to get said medication. And the pharmacist said, I cannot give you this medication. And so the doctor had to spend 30 minutes on the phone with this a pharmacist, not an official, not like a public health officer, not another doctor, but a pharmacist, explaining to them, with this woman's consent, why she was taking this medication. Wow. Can you believe the hoops that this woman had to jump through? And keep in mind, she could have died from sepsis waiting for this particular medication. So this is the problem that I have with it, where so many people on the conservative right are celebrating this decision and they're cheering and they're going, oh, this is great. We're going to save so many babies. And I happen to live in the gray space of reality between my ideological preferences and science. And science tells me that a doctor should not have to explain to a pharmacist someone's private medical information in order to get them life-saving medication.
You're exactly right. And I did hear from many friends who are in the medical field over the weekend talking about how this is just going to make it so much more complex. And I have yet, and I looked at it up again, I have yet to see a study that shows that more restrictions on abortion actually leads to fewer abortions. It's the contrary with every single study that has been done. I have yet to see anything. And even though, you know, it was so hard not to work on Friday when such a big thing happened. And as I've explained before, I'm not pro-abortion. I am definitely pro-choice. It is not a decision that I would have made for myself, but I am not going to pretend that I know what women go through when they have to make such a difficult decision. And, you know, there's already been so much, you know, said about how it is not used as a form of birth control. And so many of those extreme stories that you hear, like, oh, you can have abortion right until the child is about to be born and, you know, et cetera, those are so rare, but are used as examples to put fear in everybody. So, I mean, Friday's ruling obviously was just such a sad and disappointing day, even though we knew it was going to happen. But now when you see just the medical consequences of this and what this is going to mean, it's truly frightening. And I think we're just going into uncharted territory. And so I was, I guess, feeling a bit more optimistic when I saw what happened in terms of different companies reacting. And in fact, I want to talk about that, because right after Friday's Supreme Court decision, some of Washington's biggest employers pledged to make sure that their workers would continue to have access to reproductive health care. So Alaska Airlines, Microsoft, Starbucks, and many others even went as far as saying that they would cover travel costs of employees who live in areas where abortion services aren't available. Seattle-based Zillow had a dollar figure attached, said they would reimburse up to $7,500 each time travel is needed for access to health care. And I'm just curious, all of you listening right now, and you, Jack, are you surprised by the quick reaction by these big companies? And is this a positive move for them?
Man, are we going to have like a capitalist civil war where where there are some businesses that are frequented by, you know what I mean? Like they're like people who want to frequent businesses that are support abortion, and then there are other people who will never go there again. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and Dick's Sporting Goods is an example. Support abortion. Yeah, Dick's Sporting Goods. I mean, they made a big statement as well. But I don't look at it as a supporting abortion. It's like supporting healthcare, which, reproductive services is part of that whole thing.
Yeah, I just, my concern is that like, I like the fact that the companies are taking a stand, which is something that I don't often say. I often say like, I wish, you know, companies wouldn't take a political stance on things. But in this particular issue, I think Tesla, Disney, Alaska Airlines, I mean, just a bunch of different companies came out and said that they would facilitate this. I think it just goes to show how, I think it's like 70% of Americans agree that a woman should have access to an abortion to some degree or another. I think it just goes to show the kind of disproportionate thoughts and feelings around the issue, whereas the vast majority of Americans think that women should have access to quote unquote reproductive health versus like what a minority in the country believes based on their ideological 100%
preferences. Agree. And my reaction was, wow. I mean, again, on a day that it was just so dismal, and I don't want to be very clear, this is not a decision I would make for myself, but I know that some people need to have that choice. I felt glimmers of hope hearing these companies willing to say, you know what, we're going to make sure that this still can happen, in the cases where it's necessary. And so,
yeah,
text us though, 888-973-5476. I get used to even saying that number, like the things that I have forgotten in 2 weeks. What the heck?
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to read that text line, Ursula. You don't even want to take a look at it.
Oh, are you serious? Oh, no. Oh, no. I know. Okay, I'll take a break from it. Still ahead, a lot of you are going to be going on summer break when you're out of the office. Is there a trick to make sure that you truly get a break when you're away from work? We'll talk about that coming up next. This is the G and Ursula Show. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Happy Monday to all of you. It is going to be a warm one. So, Jack, tell me, have you ever written one of these emails? Hello, I'm out of the office until further notice. And I promise you, I'm not going to read this message, even if you try. Thank you.
I have never written one. I don't see the reason to do it. The weird thing is like sometimes I'll send an email to management and that'll come back to me. I'll get that blasted back at me. And I'm almost like a little offended. Do you know? I'm almost like a little. I'd rather have somebody else say, oh, yeah, you know, so-and-so's not in town right now. I feel like that's a little bit more, you know, there's something very cold about the, I am out of the office and I will not be returning until Tuesday, January. You know what I mean? It just something is very robotic about it.
Yeah, well, and you're also hoping that someone's actually going to read it and have a reaction other than who cares.
It's okay, not so. Who cares. It makes me angry. Yeah. It's a reminder every single time. Hi, I'm on vacation. Sucker.
Yeah.
Okay, so the reason I'm bringing this up, though, is the question is, what does it take to truly take a vacation away from the office? What can you do to have a truly worry-free vacation? And according to the Wall Street Journal, they say it's all in crafting that perfect out-of-office email, which in my many, many years here at Cairo, I have yet to even craft one of them. If I'm gone, I'm gone. And then people know that if they email me, they're going to get a response anyway. Even if I'm in Europe, I'll respond.
We have found the problem, Ms. Roy Keane.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Which is probably why I have the issues that I do. But in any case, is there a way to do a perfect out-of-office email? One of the things in this article says here that Qualtrics found that nearly 50% of respondents did at least an hour of work a day, even while on vacation. So what is your you just recently went on a break. I think you went to Hawaii, right? So what did you do? Did you just say, I'm going to just not look at my emails? What did you do?
I took Outlook off of my phone, so the company email, I just deleted the app flat out. I did not bring a computer with me, and
nice.
The only email that I checked was my personal email. I didn't look at any news. I didn't read anything. I wanted to get as far away from it as I possibly could.
And that is when you can truly take a vacation. And
right.
I think for us in this industry, it's especially important to be able to truly cut yourself off, because you can get sucked right in. And so these last couple of weeks, even though I wasn't on vacation per se, you know, doctor's orders were, you've got to stop stressing out. You've got way too many things on your plate. You've got to remove all these things. And so I forced it was so hard, though, because that's just so part of my personality. And even when people reach out, I'm one of those that I want to respond, because if someone takes the time and they're saying, I'm thinking of you right now, I feel rude if I don't have a response.
How many times did you listen to the radio show, and how many times did you turn on the news while you're on vacation?
I forced myself not to, but when I was in the ER, you know that I responded to someone's text message.
Yes, we saw you responding to people from the emergency room.
Why would you do that? Or
because there was something that needed a response that day, and it was important to me, and so I was like, I can't wait. I mean, because then it's going to make me stress out even more, which is my problem.
See, this is the problem. It's not that it is how do you get away from work in the perfect way. It is how do you minimize the guilt.
Yes.
Right? Because, like, I have done the thing where I've not sent the out-of-office email, and then I've had that hanging over me the whole 2 weeks. Like, what if people don't know? What if people are trying to get a hold of me? So I'm going to check my... There's no right balance. And Ursula, I think you're nailing it on the head, and it is participate to whatever level you will feel the worst or the least worst doing.
Yes. So what ended up happening is after the first couple days and when I realized this is, because I even wanted to come back, was like when they said, okay, we can't do the surgery, I was like, okay, I can come back early. And the bosses actually said, no, Ursula, you need to just chill out. We've got it all set up. Why don't you just, you know, take the time. I mean, you've got, you know, tons of hours built up, et cetera, et cetera. So this was the first time in the past week I'd said, I'm not listening to the show at all. The only show I listened to was on Friday, and you guys did a great job because it was such a big news day that I wanted to hear and I wanted to be part of it. But I want to hear from everybody right now, because a lot of you are going to be taking breaks. What do you do? Do you still work while you're on quote unquote vacation? I think you hit it perfectly, Jack. What you did, you must have felt truly relaxed after you came back.
Yeah, not really. But I'll tell you how bad my workaholism is, though. Before I left, I think it was like the Tuesday before I left, I let Brian know, Brian Buckley, program director. I said, hey, if you need me to like phone in from Maui, I will do it. Like I was so in that work mode where I was like, you know, if somebody drops off the line, I can bring my mic with me and my USB hookup to my laptop, and I can jump on in a second. You know, I was so primed to want to keep working that, you know, even the boss man had to say, no,
I know.
Go on vacation, enjoy your vacation.
I mean. I don't know if people realize this, but I'm guessing they do if you guys are Cairo listeners or regular Cairo listeners. Jack, you've been working round the clock. I mean, you pitch lot. So good for the boss to say, you know what? No.
I know.
That's
I know,
great.
Yeah.
Okay, coming up, we're going to need to talk about health. Have you heard about the flamingo test? Is this something that you can pass? This is going to be a question for all of you. And maybe it'll be participation time coming up in 15 minutes. We're going to try to do the flamingo test, because apparently it can reveal whether you're going to die within 7 years, according to this study. Gotta love that one. The G and Ursula Show. Welcome Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. G, I believe, is getting married to Lillian right now as we speak. He is in Florida. I know.
What?
And then he's going to be joining us an hour from now. Talk about dedication. So he is going to be joining us because apparently there's something that he didn't know about weddings that he wants to give me grief about. So we're going to hear from him in an hour. So that'll be kind of fun. So stick around for that. But right now I'm with Jack Stein, and we're going to be talking about this flamingo test, which apparently reveals your likelihood of dying within 7 years, according to this study. And they say it's all about balance. Do you have a good balance?
I do. I've been doing yoga now for about 4 or 5 months. And for whatever reason, even though I never thought I'd be very good at it, my aptitude with it has gone through the roof. Maybe it's the steroids, I'm not sure, but my ability to do yoga has improved dramatically, I'd say, over the last like 4 or 5 months.
Okay, so I think I'm going to take up yoga because I know that is a great stress reducer. But this study says that middle-aged people who cannot balance on one leg for 10 seconds are at a dramatically increased risk of dying within 7 years. So everybody, stand up right now where you're at.
All right. Should I narrate what I'm doing right now?
Yeah, follow along with us in studio here.
Follow along. Everybody stand up. Nick, thank you, even though you're not middle-aged. okay, and let's put our leg up. And can you...
Already wobbled.
I know, I'm already... My leg is trembling, but I'm doing it. Anyway, so this is the flamingo test. You have to stand barefoot on one leg while keeping your other leg raised in the air as though you're mimicking one of the hot pink birds. And you have to keep your head upright and your arms straight at your side for the 10-second duration. And apparently of the 1,700 participants in the study, 20% were unable to complete the test. And apparently the idea is that in addition to being older, so by the way, I think this is just a bunch of baloney.
Is this discrimination, Ursula?
This is complete.
Are we still holding?
Yes.
Wait, are we still holding?
Go ahead.
You have to release us.
Okay, you braggart, you. You're still holding. Okay, yeah, I gave up a while back. So apparently this test becomes much harder with age. Just 5% of participants between the ages of 51 and 55 failed the flamingo test, but when you get up to the ages of 71 and 75, it goes up to 54%.
Wow.
Well, so now the guess is if you're between 71 and 75, there's a higher chance of you dying within 7 years. Now, that's just brilliant.
Right.
Come
do you
on.
Think that, I mean, yeah, do you think that maybe this is like, I don't know, kind of like, what's the term, chef? It escapes me. It's like...
It's a causation, or it's correlation, not causation.
Exactly.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. But this does remind me of the time, and I've shared this once, but I'll share it again, because I'm all about sharing. There was a time when, most of our listeners know I'm not a drinker. I don't drink. I certainly would never drink and drive. But I was coming home from a bachelorette party, and I was on I-90, and apparently I was, tired and weaved a little bit. And so I was pulled over, and I was asked to do one of those, what do you call them, perp walk?
Yeah.
Right there on I-90. It is pitch black. I am out there. And you have to, do a whole series of different things. And then it's the, like, your balance test, and you have to walk along. And there's the strip, a line that you have to, like, walking on a balance beam. I had to take off my heels. Like, I'm not trying to do this in heels. But then I realized, my gosh, even though I hadn't had a sip of alcohol, that is not easy. I was, like, practically tripping over myself. And I thought, this guy is going to, he couldn't believe that I hadn't had a sip. I said, why don't we just skip all this and I'll just do the breathalyzer.
Yeah.
That's a smart move.
I was going to ask, because I don't think a lot of people, because they're so ridiculous, they're like circus tricks, right?
Yes.
Like lift your foot up and then pump 10 times and then do a handstand and then a somersault. It would be hard for anybody to do it, especially in a high anxiety situation.
Exactly.
I don't think, like, I was in a situation recently, oh God, this got to be months ago, where I was going through like a physical exam. And the doctor goes, I'm going to list off a series of numbers, and I want you to repeat them back to me. It's going to be 5 numbers. And I go, okay. And instantly I have anxiety around this issue because I think, oh, if I fail this, there's something wrong with me.
Right.
And he lists off the five numbers. They're not double-digit numbers, by the way. These are between 1 and 9. And I couldn't do it for whatever reason. Like he listed them off, and I go, I was like 7, 5.
Well, you said it. It's the anxiety. It's
yeah,
just
the
like
anxiety
when you're starting to think like, I should know this person's name, and I don't know this person's name, and I need to say this person's name, but I don't know it. And you start getting into that whole, you whip yourself up into this frenzy of anxiety.
Person, woman, man.
Yes.
Camera, TV.
It's that simple.
Yes. I can relate to that, though.
Or is it person, woman, camera, man, TV? I can't remember the order.
Sometimes it's really hard, but apparently this flamingo test, I'm not. I'm giving it a D grade. Well, I'm not going to. I'm not going to worry
this,
about
this.
It
could
too
actually
much.
Become part of your physical, your annual physical. So the British Society of Medicine wants doctors to start screening older patients because you know there's measures like you know your blood pressure, your heart rate, etc. But how about your balance, sir? And I don't like this because to me it's like you're using this as a tool to gather evidence to prove that yes, the diagnosis has come back, sir. You are old. Well, thank you. I knew that.
Seriously,
thank you.
Right?
Yes. Appreciate it.
So question for you, though, with your yoga, your newly found yoga habit. Did you have good balance at the beginning or is that something?
No.
See, now.
Yeah, I had to use a chair in the beginning in order to. I didn't realize how much my lack of flexibility. So in order to go from a low lunge to standing, I had to use a chair. So basically, remember chair size exercise that the old people used to have to do in the 90s?
Yes.
That was me for like the first 2 or 3 weeks. I just couldn't do so many. And now I can do a tremendous amount more stretches. But I mean, Ursula, I couldn't even. I just is going to sound silly, but I couldn't even touch my toes comfortably for the first month. And now I'm just in the position where I can do a full forward fold.
Nice.
So it takes a couple of months, but you get there.
So that is encouraging. That is encouraging because I'm going with the, as 360 says, the flamenco study needs further review. The flamenco and the flamingo test need further review.
Yeah.
Okay, still ahead, what's new at 10? We're going to have more on that coming up on the G and Ursula Show.